Now, welcome to another inspiring edition of Sound Insight with Dr. Tom Curran.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. This is Dr. Tom Curran. It's great to be with you. And yes, I'm still walking the Camino. And the challenges and tests continue. Sometimes the challenges and tests are right on my body. Sometimes they are in terms of the length of the journey I'm making. Sometimes it has to do with being far from home when stuff is happening. And so kids are now all back in school and just a lot of juggling. And so trying to be supportive of Carrie as well as the folks that I'm serving in real estate, it's a lot. So pray for me, even as I'm praying for you. All right, today we're going to have some updates from 3 days that I did on the Camino. Back in a minute.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Curran, the host of Sound Insight, but also a realtor serving wonderful folks like you in the state of Washington and in Idaho. I've had the privilege and pleasure of helping dozens of families in the last 2.5 years discern and find a strategy, a path, and a plan to help their families find a whole new life in eastern Washington and northern Idaho. If I could be of service to you in that, I would love to. Please reach out, drtomcurran.com, drtomcurran.com.
All right, welcome back to the program. Let's begin with a prayer. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Heavenly Father, we come before you in Jesus' holy name. We thank you for the gift of your Spirit at work in our lives. Lord, ask that you give us the grace today to follow you on a path of penance and prayer. And Lord, I also pray in a special way, Lord, for the upcoming fall share-a-thon of Sacred Heart Radio. Jesus, that you would continue to bless so many through the great work of Sacred Heart Radio, and that you'd bless many to give generously and financially to the work of Sacred Heart Radio. And Lord, so I just ask blessings upon all of those who are listening right now, that each of us would live the journey you have for us today well. We make this prayer in Jesus' holy name. Amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Okay, let's go to the updates.
Hey, all right, I'm back, continuing on with my reflections. And today I'm actually in León, and I think I'm out at day 18. So I'm going to be doing it. We'll see if I can get through them, but I've been taking notes for these different stages over the different days, but haven't had the energy or the time, or maybe sometimes the space to be able to peacefully do that. But today, it's the Lord's Day, it's a Sunday, and it's the 16th, and I have some neat things to share about that, no, the 15th, and I'll have some neat things to share about that being here in León. So one of the things that differs day to day in the Camino are the places where I end up staying. I'm staying in hostels, but I've so far always been able to have a private room and a private bathroom, and just to give me some more space. But what's interesting is the difference between them. Tomorrow I'm going to offer a reflection about that, about the difference in the types of spaces and creating hospitality through the space that you have for yourself. But today I'm going to talk about not space, but face, seeking his face. Hopefully you can see behind me there the image of the holy face of Jesus, which is one of the four purposes of my Camino. Remember, the four purposes of my Camino: to 10x my life, to live in this final stage of my life, a greater realization of the ideal of what God has for me, as far as I can discern it, and how I spend my time and energy in life. The second is to truly walk the Camino as a pilgrim, doing penance. And I'm going to have a reflection on the meaning of penance later on in days to come. The different layers and meanings of penance definitely has been a central meaning of my Camino to this point. The third is to seek his face. And I'm going to reflect a bit about that today. And then the last one is to go out into the deep, that the Lord has been in the boat of my life, speaking from the boat of my life in my career. And now he's asking me to come out into the deep and to lower my nets for a catch. And that's standing in front of me. I'm looking forward to the days to come and how this great catch will manifest itself. And hopefully, in my sense, it was through signs and wonders and miracles happening. And I think there have been some, and you'll hear again some of those stories in the days to come. Seeking his face. One of the great meanings of the Camino is, the Camino is the way, right? It's the way that a pilgrim walks, and the Camino Francés, this way goes from St. Jean-Pied-de-Port all the way to Santiago de Compostela. And seeking his face is this theme where in the course of our lives, what are we actually seeking? What's the actual meaning of our lives? And how does that determine what we spend our time and attention and energy on? Well, today was a day I had a chance to reflect on that. Beautifully, I was able to get up early and do the Camino walk by myself. I didn't really engage with anybody in the course of my walk. It was very beautiful, still in the sort of mountainous area, coming down into flatter areas now. Walked along a beautiful lake for the first time. I got to see some beautiful wildlife in nature down at, in a more of a flat area, and ended up in a Zofra. And after I got settled there, was able to put my feet in a cold pool. The place I stayed had a pool. Unfortunately, it was rainy, and so the water was so cold, it wasn't really easy to swim in it, but I could put my feet in it, which was actually, frankly, quite refreshing. And then I made my way over to one of the only bars in town, a little bar restaurante. When I say a bar, I mean a place that is a place where you can get some food and some drink. And I went to the bar and finally met up with the priest I had heard about. And he ended up joining this couple that I had passed and crisscrossed over the course of a few days, but we had never chatted. Well, it ended up that we ended up sitting down together. There's a couple from the Bay Area, a Catholic couple. And the priest comes and he ends up joining us because he knows this couple. They had spent time together and started the conversation. And the short of it is, this couple reminded me of some people that I would meet in my career as an executive coach. So working with senior executives, C-level executives, like a CFO, CEO, CIO, CTO, different chief level executives over the course of 25 years in my career. One of the things that I would encounter occasionally would be an executive, this person tends to be sharp, very skilled, and very committed and determined to be able to let their career rise to the level that it had by the time that I got involved in their lives as an executive coach, coming in to support them and help them get even to that next place, help them to be able to continue to be successful. Well, one of the things that would show up occasionally in the course of my career, it would be that there would be executives that I would work with who gave their lives over to their career advancement. And a couple of implications that came from that. The first was this, was that you tend to think from the outside that people who rise to a higher level of position in an organization, they are making more money, they have more power or influence, that people are looking to them. And there's a sense of maybe sometimes a little admiration or a little bit awe and wonder, and look at how far and how high they have gone, is that they would say behind closed doors in the confidential setting of a coaching relationship that the more that I got to the level of ownership, because the higher they would go, they would get shares of stock in the company, options that would vest over time, and then they would become more owners in the company. The more that I became an owner of the company, the more that I became owned by the company. The more that I grew in my ownership share, the more that I actually was owned by the company. And for some of the companies that I served, this meant that if this company said to you, you need to go this way, you're going to go that way. If you need to move here, you're going to move there. And so there was very little in the way of boundaries that were put up around that executive's life. And it's a bit of the opposite of what you'd expect. You think, oh, the higher they go, the more they're going to end up having freedom, the more they're going to have disposition over discretion over how they're going to spend their time and their lives. And the answer was no. The more they became owned by the very company that they were serving, the stresses, the pressures, the responsibility, and all of that only increased. Sometimes that was accompanied by one of two phenomena. One was the absence of children in a particular executive's life, and the other was an absence from their children's lives, where they gave themselves over so much to their position, and it was what the position demanded or the company required, that it pulled them further and further away from their own time spent with their kids. I can remember talking to one of the most successful, highly placed executives who oversaw an enormous amount of yearly revenue in the company, over $10 billion a year in revenue streams. And he was towards the end of his career. And he said to me in the privacy of a coaching conversation, my son is graduating from high school and is heading off to college. And I realize now I missed his childhood. He's leaving and I missed his childhood. His growing up, I wasn't there to the degree or the extent that I ever thought or imagined when I was when I had this vision of being his father. But for the sake of providing for him, for the sake of being able to give good things to him, I gave myself more and more over to the job. And in the end, he ended up sacrificing his being a father that was present to and engaged with his son for the sake of providing for his son, providing for his family, by giving himself over that much more fully to his career. It was a shocking admission, and it was a sadness for him. He was really, truly sorrowful over what had happened. And here he was, you know, from the outside, a very admired, very influential, important person in this important corporation. And yet interiorly, it was, I don't know if that was worth what it cost. I also had executives, this was rarer, but I had executives who said, Tom, help me to be successful enough to get to a certain level of my career, but keep me from losing my life with my family. Help me to not go higher, so high that I'm going to lose my life to my career. But at the same time, I still want to be able to do the great work that I'm able to do for this company and make the money that provides for my family. But I don't want to lose my family in the process. And I admired that so very much. In the two instances that I can remember that, they were both very devout Catholic guys and were very honest and open about want to be excellent, but I don't want to sacrifice my family for the sake of my career. So that was the second of the two where I lost the time with my kids. The other was a couple of instances where I was working with very senior women, very senior in, again, bigger organizations, and they had made the decision to forego having children, that their career aspirations and pursuits and the meaning and mission and passion and purpose they found in those things was so great that they were willing to say, I won't have children I'm going to say no to children for the sake of my career and the sense of meaning and fulfillment that it brings to my life. I met one of those women at dinner that night. This couple from the Bay Area, Catholics, they were retired, very well off, and young. When I say young, I mean in their 50s. And let's say they were in their mid-50s, good shape, well-spoken, articulate, thoughtful, very successful in their careers. And here they are on the Camino, just sort of having another experience in life. And when they engaged in conversation with me, and all of a sudden it comes out, yeah, I've been married for 30 years and have 9 kids, their eyes popped. They popped. They didn't have any kids. They had 2 dogs. Now, let me say first off that I do know a number of couples who are childless, not by choice, but because of physical incapacity, the experience of infertility that prevented welcoming of a child into their married life. That's incredibly painful. It's a cross. It's incredibly difficult. I also know that there are couples whose only children they have are in heaven, because they were able to become pregnant and then lost that child before the child came to birth through miscarriage, and have experienced multiple miscarriages. I met one fellow who shared with me they had a number of kids, but they also experienced 4 miscarriages in their married life, and the pain that was, and that sense of these are children, but we weren't receiving the gift of being able to be parents to them on earth. Those of you that know Carrie and my story, without rehashing the whole thing, but to say it in 30 seconds, we experienced in the early years of our marriage for 4 years infertility, and then we experienced a miscarriage. We finally had a child, naturally, by our oldest child. We experienced a number of miscarriages, and then we adopted our second child, and then we had 7 kids after that, naturally. And in the course of those other 7 kids, had a couple of other miscarriages. So we are blessed with 9 children, but we have more children in heaven than on earth. We've lost more than that. We've lost 12 children through miscarriage. So Carrie and I have known the pain of infertility and know the true suffering of miscarriage. That was not this person's situation. That was not this couple's situation. They'd chosen to pursue a meaning and a mission that was bounded by this world and by limited concerns that this world has. Today, my theme is seeking his face. Seeking his face, this holy face of Jesus, and that devotion to the holy face does sum up in a very distinct way the entire mission of our life on earth. Our life on earth is not measured ultimately and most fundamentally by the things of this earth. Our call by God and his gift and grace is to become saints. We become saints through the union that we have with Jesus Christ, the profound, intimate, personal, and life-giving union with Jesus Christ by his grace, by his gift that comes to us. We're initiated into it through baptism. So his Holy Spirit lives within us, and that we journey pursuing the one who is the way. We continue to pursue Jesus, whom we've come to know. We continue to journey deeper into union with Christ. We seek his face because we long to know him more intimately. And in the pursuit of Jesus, in seeking his face, we also come to have emerged within us a sense of mission or purpose in this world. And a mission and purpose in this world that will often have fruits that go beyond this world. What the church says is that the greatest gift that comes to a married couple, the greatest gift given to a husband and a wife, is a child. That is the fruit of a Catholic understanding of the marital union. And here I am sitting across from this couple at this table, and they've been married for almost 20 years. And for whatever mysterious reason, that teaching about ultimate purpose, fundamental meaning, a foundational vision for life that would include fruit that goes beyond this, beyond their lives and beyond time, would be the openness to the gift of children. And the pursuit of Jesus Christ and the pursuit of him together with your spouse would naturally leave one open and longing for the gift of children. And so seek his face. And in seeking the face of Jesus, it's a personal. What matters is personal. What matters is the person of Jesus, and seeking to be in more profound union with him. We get to have that encounter at Mass, and so making Mass a more central part of our lives. We're seeking his face. We're seeking that intimacy of having Christ come and commune with us so that we can commune with him more deeply. That begins to matter more than career. That begins to matter more than influence. That begins to matter more than position. That begins to matter more than possessions. That begins to matter more than financial security and wealth. Those things play a part in our lives. But prioritizing and pursuing what matters the most is pursuing Jesus Christ. And if you're called to be married, pursuing Christ together. Pursuing his mission for married life is to be open to life, to the gift. It's a gift. The gift of children. That brings fulfillment beyond what we could imagine. That brings a fruit that will live forever. If God's given you the gift of a child, that child has a destiny that is eternal. And that child might end up being what? Someone who ends up getting married and then gives birth to another child. I'm just using one. So God's given us the gift of 9 children. How many of those 9 will get married, and how many of those 9 are going to have kids? How many of those kids? How many kids each? The tree just grows and grows. One of the beautiful and almost overwhelming pictures that is in our house is a picture of Carrie's mom, Mary Margaret, and it's a picture of her with her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It might even be a great-grandchild or two in that picture with her. And there are, at that point, there was something like about 50, 45 or 50 in that picture, just surrounding her. And she just has a smile on her face. And now it's over 100. This is about 15 years later. Now there's over 100 the fruit on that tree that has flown, that has come forth from her life. That's better than a big bank account and 2 dogs. That's better than the health to walk the Camino and not have any concerns that there's a job waiting for me when I get home. The Catholic Church offers an incredibly powerful and important corrective to what the world would propose to us. Is what is worth seeking. Seeking financial abundance, seeking career pinnacle achievements, seeking things that will die and rot, the moth will eat and the rust will corrode, versus things that will endure. Let's pray that on the way, on the Camino that is your life, that we will do the first thing first and seek the face of Jesus, seek his face in prayer. Seek Jesus and what he wills for our lives. And if we can be blessed with a spouse that does that with us, that will be open to have cleansed the vision, the attitudes, the ways that we live, so that we would be open to the greatest gifts that the Lord would give to us in our married life, holiness and a mission that is open to life and the gift of children. And a last word, pray for those couples who experience infertility, who experience miscarriages, the pain and the suffering, that they know that the Lord would bring them healing, the Lord would bring them comfort, the Lord would bring them a gift of life in ways that surprise them, whether that is in living lives of service or in opening their lives to receive children and in adopting children or even fostering children as a very powerful and important way of fulfilling that mission that is at the heart of marriage. Hey, welcome back. Now I'm on day 10 of my reflections on walking the Camino. It's great to be with you. So if you're enjoying these, please, would you like and subscribe to my channel? Click on the notification bell so that each day when a new one comes out, you'll be able to enjoy that reflection as well. Also, if you're on Facebook, you can follow my page there for the same thing. So today I'm talking about going from Zofra to Quintanilla del Monte. And Quintanilla del Monte, it's about a kilometer off of the Camino. It was the name of the town where I was staying. And I bring that up because today's reflection is really about the gift of hospitality. The gift of hospitality. And I'm going to tell you two stories about getting to the town. And then from there, I will actually offer a reflection about the power and importance of hospitality in our own lives of faith. So yesterday I was reflecting on meaning and mission on the way and how we seek the face of the Lord and how I had encountered this priest. I didn't realize he was a priest, but I heard his name and then it came out because he wasn't dressed like a priest. And he was doing this, he wasn't hiding the fact that he was a priest. He just wasn't overtly showing people that he was. And if you stick around in about a week, I'm going to share a reflection about two priests that I met who were very overt about the fact that they were, that they are priests and they are walking this intentionally as priests. So, and the interesting thing was that I would have guessed that this priest would have had an interest in engaging in conversation with me because of my background in church work. He didn't show any interest at the dinner that night. Remember, he was there with that other couple, and they were most fired up about sharing pictures of their dogs. I shared yesterday, and I just want you to know this. I've been praying for that couple. Just praying for them that I would have a chance to meet them again. I am praying for them, have a sense that they might be able to literally redeem their own parenting call through that time and health and energy and wealth that they have to actually take on a level of parenting, if you will, just use that broadly, of helping entire villages or entire orphanages around the world, because they have immense capabilities and energy and wealth and disposable time to just really to do something great with all the stewardship of what they've been giving. So I'm praying for that. I'm praying for that, whether or not they ever actually encounter me, that somehow that would bubble up in them. So pray for them, that they would be able to have that sense of really a graced stewardship over the gift of the time and the life that they have. Okay, so got up early. I started walking. Again, I love walking by myself at the beginning. I'm taking the time in the first couple of hours of my walk to pray for my family. Again, as a pilgrim, walking a path of penance and prayer for my wife, my kids, and for all of you. I pray for all of you who have asked me to pray for you and for your intentions. And I'm praying for all the people that I meet on the way. So as I'm doing this, as I'm walking along, look who's ahead of me, the priest. And he's limping. kind of limping along. And so I caught up to him fairly quickly because he's not going very fast. And I, "Hello, Father, it's great to see you." "Oh, hello." I said, "Father," I said, "I am an angel sent from God." I said, "Father, in my day pack, I have compression socks that you've pulled a muscle in your calf. I have compression socks for calves. I've got two in my bag just in case I have, like if I pull a muscle or I strain a muscle during my hike, I'm happy to let you have one." "No, no, no, that's okay. I'll just, up ahead, there's a tree. I'll just stretch it out. I'll be fine." I said, "No, Father, please. I have two. I'm happy to give you one, really, to trust that maybe this is, in fact, the reason why I'm bumped into you is that I'd be willing to give you this gift." "No, no, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm really okay. I'll just stretch it. I'll be fine." And I thought, what a stubborn son of a gun. An unwillingness to receive the gift that I was open to give him freely. It wasn't a huge generous act, I mean, but I meant it. And he was not budging. And then he said to me, "Don't let me hold you up." "Tom, here's your hat. What's your hurry? Don't let me hold you up." And I just had to smile and say, "All right, Father, I'll leave you to it." And off I went. And so I continued my walk, and I arrived at after a long stretch of a bunch of miles, there was a golf course, and there was the check-in place, and there's a little bar at the golf course, and the pilgrims are welcome. So I happened to be like the only one when I walked in there at the bar, and so I offered, I asked, got a cup of coffee, and I got a croissant, eating my breakfast, and then an elderly couple came in. I'm old, but this couple was probably 10 years older than I was. And I had this natural sense of like a boundary, a bit of a wall. Like I really wasn't that interested in talking with them. I wanted to just give me one more coffee and then let me pay my bill and I'm moving on. And so I had this, it's just interesting. There's just this natural sense of a bit of a boundary there where I'm really not interested in engaging with you. Well, sure enough, they sat down just like the next table over. And so it's kind of a big open space, and it's just the myself and the two of them. And sure enough, I hear them speaking English. So we start chatting, and lo and behold, they live in Florida. I live in Spokane Valley, on the east side of Washington. But guess what? 5 years ago, I used to live in Seattle for 20 years, and about 5 or 10 years ago, they moved from Seattle. So they also had lived in Seattle for all of these years. On top of that, they're devout Catholics. And we just started talking about being Catholic in Seattle. And they're like, "Wait a minute, what's your name again?" Sure enough, they were like regular listeners to Sacred Heart Radio, the channel that the network that my program is on, and they knew me and they knew Sound Insight. They said, "Oh, we would listen to you on the radio. I don't believe this. This is so amazing." And here they had made rosaries that they were giving out to people on the Camino. And I'm like, "Oh, I already have a rosary that I'm using, but thank you so much." And it was so interesting because I was willing to overcome that hesitancy and received a beautiful gift. And the gift was this connection, this connecting point with this couple whose lives had intersected with mine and whose lives I had had a positive influence on years before. And that openness gave me the gift of being able to receive them and then to receive the blessing of our shared faith, the reason why we were doing this, and and the willingness to just encourage each other prayerfully. And shortly after that, the priest come limping in, walked right past me, sat at a table further away, and he missed out. Hospitality. St. Benedict emphasizes the gift of hospitality. When someone comes to the monastery door, knocks on the door, and you open the door, you welcome them like you'd welcome Christ. And that theme of being open to receive someone with a sense of warmth, this is something that I experience day to day in different ways whenever I arrive at the next hostel. And what is so interesting is the difference that exists between the different places. And this day, leaving Azofra and going to Quintanilla del Monte was probably the starkest example of the differences in hospitality. I left Azofra. You might remember if you watched yesterday's reflection that this place had a pool. It was actually really a beautiful hotel. I call it a hotel, hostel. It was beautiful. It's just lovely furnishings and just lovely. And what was really most prominent about this hotel, as beautiful as it was, were the rules, the limitations. No, you check in at this time, you check out at this time. This area of the hotel closes at this time. The entire place shuts down at this time. Nope, that's not available because of this. And as beautiful as it was, it really didn't leave me very welcomed or received. It was almost as if they were more saying that you should accept that we are a gift to you than you are a gift to us. And so we're really clear about our boundaries and our rules, and we expect that you operate within them. Flash forward to the place where I ended up. This place was about a kilometer off the main trail. But the reason I had chosen these places was just availability. I'm only booking a day ahead, and so I have limited availability for the kind of places that I'm staying in. And so this place was available, but it meant taking a bit of a walk beyond the trail. And so I got there and I was tired. It was a long day. It was hot. And it was, again, every day is beautiful. The days are starting to flatten out a bit more now. And again, still a bit hilly and going through forests and vineyards and having some rises and falls. But things are starting to flatten out more towards what's called the meseta, this sort of middle section of the Camino that is going to be much more flat. And those are the days to come where are much flatter, and it leads to different encounters. But when I arrived at this place, I had been excited because I had read in the reviews that there was a mother-daughter team that ran this hostel, and it wasn't as nice. It wasn't as beautiful, it wasn't as opulent, it wasn't as beautiful in terms of the furnishings and in terms of the quality of the space, but it was so much more hospitable, so much more welcoming. When I got there, they smile on their face, knew my name, and I asked about the services they had there at the space, and they're sorry that they're all booked up. And I said, I'm just really tired. And what they did, they went ahead and they said, you know what? They went in the other room, they talked for a minute, and they came back out and they said, you know what? We have a room that has a bathtub, and it'll allow you, it's a big tub, it'll allow you to soak and get some refreshment for your legs. Would you like that? At no extra charge. We just want to offer it to you as a gift. I'm like, who are you people? And so I said, yes, I looked at it. I ended up being in, honestly, the largest room that I've been in so far. but it wasn't the largest expense at all. It was only because of the graciousness, the gift of hospitality of this couple, the way they received me. They really saw me as a gift, and they wanted me to feel welcomed, that I belonged, and that they would do what they could within the boundaries of, you know, what they can do to operate a space to take care of me. And I had a delightful stay at that space because of the spirit of hospitality. Hospitality is one of Carrie, my wife Carrie's greatest gifts. She is very attentive to the reality of giving and receiving hospitality. When we have people come over to our home, we want to welcome them into our home. She's very thoughtful about not only having the space clean and, you know, so that people walk into a space that's not cluttered and a mess, but that there'll be food and drink there that they'll enjoy. And she goes to the details, not only just thinking about what will be like what will be enjoyed by them and suitable, but she thinks about how are we going to spend our time, right? So if there are kids, preparing our kids to make sure that, you know, you're going to have fun together and you're going to play, but hey, let's make sure that kids are included. Let's make sure that we're choosing games that are not going to leave kids out and be able to have appropriate fun and enjoyment together. And then she'll even say to me, Tom, what should we talk about? Let's make sure that we engage in conversation that's meaningful and enjoyable for the ones who come over. And conversely, when we go to someone's house and they're going to be showing us hospitality, she's always of the mind that says, let's make sure that we bring a gift. Let's bring a gift just to thank them for welcoming us for a dinner, even if it's friends of ours that, you know, we know and we see them, you know, often. It's like, well, let's bring them a gift. Let's bring some food to help, you know, enhance the event. What can we bring? And then for the kids, it's like, kids, when you go in there, thank the hosts, the mom and the dad, look them in the eyes, shake their hands, thank them for letting us come, and then ask the question, is there anything I can do? And mean it. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? And you know what? When some parents, when they're hosting an event, and my kids come in and do that, they take them up on it. They'll take, oh, yeah, would you do this or would you do that? And what a gift that is to be able to express hospitality, even when you're going to a space, to be able to show that sense of, I want to be able to offer a gift, even though you're being a gift to us, and we thank you for that. We love that idea of reciprocity, the mutuality of giving and receiving. And so the power and importance of hospitality, of being open to welcome, when I was able to let down that little whatever, I don't know what it was, that little wall or blockage that was holding me back from engaging with that couple. Thank God that they reached out to me. And then we ended up having a very blessed conversation. The priest, for whatever mysterious reason, had put up this boundary and was unwilling to receive the gift that I was offering to him. And he had no interest in engaging in what could have been a real gift to him, which would have been hopefully an engaging, enjoyable conversation about life in faith, life in the church today. And you know, someone who gets it, someone who understands to some degree, more than most, what it means to be a priest in ministry. And so I felt sad that, you know, there are those who are going to have a stronger set of rules and boundaries about relationships that will hold you back from giving or receiving hospitality, giving or receiving, being a gift. But when you can be open to use that gift of hospitality, you will be manifesting in a very beautiful way the love of the Lord, the love of God who is open to us. He's open to receive us. He's open to show us hospitality. He's open to give us gifts, even as we strive to seek him. So there was my lesson from the Camino today. I'm going to pick up, talk to you about a couple of fellows, focusing on one in particular that I met at this same place in Punta Mila del Monte. And I'm going to talk about courage in parenting and in grandparenting, as well as the influence that others can have on our lives of faith. Hey, welcome back to the journey of my hiking the Camino. And so here I am on day 11, going from Quintanilla del Monte to Atapuerco. And I talked a lot about hospitality and the gift of hospitality and that mother-daughter couple, that mother-daughter team that provided such beautiful hospitality to me overnight. They actually offered to the guests to get them in a taxi and to drive them back to the Camino. Because again, it was about a kilometer off. She's like, our expense, no cost to you. And I first thought, yes, I'll take that. And then I thought, no, you know what? I'm gonna walk. I'm gonna walk this Camino. I'm not gonna even take a taxi for a kilometer or for a few kilometers what they were willing to go. And but just the beautiful act of generosity was in hospitality, and the giving in hospitality was beautiful. I'm talking about another aspect of that today in this walk, and it has to do with stewardship, but not stewardship of time, treasure, or talents, but stewardship of relationships, friendships, people that have a big influence on your life, that's a gift that shouldn't be taken for granted. And sometimes that stewardship is related to, for instance, as a husband to Carrie, there's a stewardship in that relationship. And then God grants us the gift of children. We don't choose what they're going to be like, right? God gives us the gift of these children. And then for those of you that are grandparents, there are grandchildren involved, and there's a stewardship that's involved in those relationships. That's going to come in at the end. I'm going to tell the story of a guy that I met. He actually was staying at that same hostel last night. And he ended up staying in the same town that I ended up at. And we ended up having dinner together because I wandered into the little ristorante where he was. And we ended up having a really interesting conversation that I'm going to talk to you about. It has to do with stewardship of relationships and the impact that they can have on your life, and that they for negative as well as positive. And then sometimes the call that we have to be courageous and engaging in the relationships that are ours. And that theme played itself out today, where I ended up bumping back into two women that I had sat next to at Mass at the end of the first day of our hike. At the end of the first day of our hike, it was the Feast of St. Augustine, and they went to the Pilgrim's Mass, as did I. I ended up sitting right there in the front row next to them. And I could tell that one of them was Catholic and one of them wasn't. And I was following the readings and was showing them to one of those ladies. It was my own little interaction with her, but she wasn't interested in trying to like follow with me. So I just let them be. And then I never saw them after that. And I didn't even remember that it was the two of them, because we didn't have any words or conversation together. We were both just all facing forward at Mass. Until later that day, as I was walking, it was a bit of a long hike. This was an extra long day for me in hiking. And I ended up walking along this very beautiful, like top ridge of a range of very high hills, not really mountains, but very high hills. This range between these trees that just went on for miles. It was just gorgeous. God's creation, amazing and beautiful. Well, I bumped into and caught up to these ladies. Now, again, this is 11 days or 10 days later. And we start chatting and we get into this conversation about why are you here? What are you doing? And the one woman that I'm talking to, they come from the Kansas City, St. Louis area. She was a little bit reserved in mentioning the idea of God or faith or whatever, and until I mention why I'm doing the Camino. I bring up the fact that I'm Catholic and I'm walking as a pilgrim, and that tends to be the way I was introducing my own Camino. I stopped talking about living the 10X life. I started more. I did talk about that a bit, but I was more to my entry point was I'm a pilgrim, I'm Catholic, and I'm walking this on behalf of my family. And then all of a sudden it opened her up to mentioning the fact that she and her friend are also married, both of them longer than 30 years. And both of them had left their husbands at home, and Both of them were empty nesters, and both of them were now at this stage in their lives where they were trying to get a sense of, Lord, what should we do with the time that remains? What's our purpose and mission now? And so that at that point, I did talk about this 10X life. If you don't know what I mean by that, you'll have to listen to my very first reflection on the Camino about this idea, simply put, of striving to live in the time that remains, a closer approximation to the ideal of what you can be doing with the God-given gifts that God has given to you day to day, how you pour your life out, using them for God's purposes ever more fully, ever more perfectly. So I started sharing all of that, and it seemed to resonate deeply with them. And what struck me was this, was two things, is that these two women really and truly were walking this Camino out of a sense of good to great. Good to great. They weren't broken people trying to get well. They are people who had a foundation that was strong. It was clear. It was rooted in faith. It was rooted in the Lord. And they were really walking this saying, Lord, what do you have for us now? And that for me, it reminded me of my days in coaching as an executive coach serving companies. I would often encounter, right, there's two different uses of coaching in larger organizations. The first one was what you'd call a turnaround coach. They would bring a coach in, parachute a coach into the life of someone in the company who was struggling. They weren't succeeding. And they were, if you will, sort of on their way to failing and exiting the company. And a coach was brought in to see if they could turn it around. So their most dominant experience in the company was not one of success, but of failing. And that the coach was there to turn a failure into a success. That was one kind of coaching. Then there were the what you call good to great coaching. And so these were the people who were identified because they were successful, talented. They had a runway where there was still more to grow and to go and advance in their career. And they were given the gift of a coach to help them advance to a higher place even faster, to help them get more insight, to be able to overcome whatever the nominal challenges were there, to help them advance and mature and get to that next place. So they'll call that good to great coaching. So I was a good to great coach. And one of the things that I notice on the Camino is that the majority of people that I'm encountering tend to be in the I'm broken and I'm trying to get whole. And only occasionally am I bumping into people who are in a sense of I'm principally whole, and I'm trying to get to that next place, trying to even advance to that next place, Lord, that you have for me in my life. One of the things that have helped, that helped these women be so successful or to have such a good solid foundation, was their friendship. And it was their friendship that actually, in fact, had introduced them to their spouses. And that it was the fact that they knew each other's spouses that gave confidence that this was the right one for you. This was a good fit for you. We're going to walk together through life together. And now here they were over 30 years later, walking the Camino together. And they were it was obvious, so natural and beautiful. The friendship that the Lord had given to them was a very powerful stewardship. The stewardship that they had in caring for each other and walking together. Don't take for granted the gift of some of these friends or other people that end up coming into your life to help shape and mold the person you are today. That might be a friend. And if it's a friend, thank God for that friend. Don't take that friend for granted. And maybe express in gratitude some way, somehow, the gift of their friendship, that you're grateful for that gift. And that you hope that, you know, that you walk together in a way that glorifies God and is a blessing to each other, so that each of you can achieve the magnificence that God has for you in this world.